Today is July the 15th, 1985. My name is David Wallace, and I'm interviewing Troll Young. Troll Young is county agent, or was county agent, of Washington County from 1930 to 1974. He also was director of the Kentucky Farm Bureau, school board member, city and county for 20 years. Was past director of the Kentucky Beef Cattle Association and the County Agents Association, and other honors that are too numerous to mention. To start off with, Troll, I'd like to just to establish a little background for this, ask you your birth date and place of birth.
Well, David, I was born January 15, 1908, 3 miles north of Bardstown on Louisville Road. And my father was William G. Young, who was a farmer and a rural mail carrier. And my mother was Aline Barrett Troll, who came from Louisville.
Did your interest in farming then come from your father and from having lived on a farm?
Well, I think so. Of course, I was involved in, as a boy, in some light farm work, and I guess my main interest came through, David, through my membership in the 4-H Club. We had a Holstein Heifer Club in Nelson County back in the early 20s, and we each had a Holstein Heifer, which we kept and raised calves from, and our county agent, Mr. C.L. Hill, was quite a leader and kept me interested in dairying and in farming, and also we had a livestock judging team, which judged down at Kentucky State Fair. We judged dairy cattle, beef cattle, sheep, hogs, and I don't believe we had horses in that deal. And I was lucky enough, I guess, to place second that year as an individual judge.
So from there, did you then think that you wanted to be a county agent, or is this something that came later?
Well, I didn't really have any definite goal, David. Of course, I was very fond of Mr. Hill. As I put in one previous interview, I kind of thought he walked on water, and he was sort of my mentor and my guide and encouraged me to go to the College of Agriculture at the University of Kentucky. But at that juncture, I didn't really know what I was going to do when I got through.
Well, when you did get through, did you immediately go into the farming area, or did you do something else?
Well, of course, that was, they got rid of me up there in 1929, and that was just pending of the market stock crash at the time. And so I worked that summer after I got out of the university as a 4-H camp assistant, going from one 4-H camp to another in northern Kentucky with Mr. Ernest Fish, who was one of the state assistant 4-H leaders then. And after that, I went in as assistant county agent in first in Todd County, and then I was also in Simpson County that fall. And then for a brief period, I was acting county agent in Logan County in the midwinter for a month or two before I came to Washington County.
How did you get the Washington County job?
Well, Mr. Gardner, G.W. Red Gardner, had planned to resign, and Mr. Grady, who was our district leader at the time, asked me if I wanted it, and of course, since it was near my home county and all, and I was just happy to be able to come here.
When you started in Washington County in 1930, obviously you were in the middle of the Great Depression. What were some of the problems that Washington County farmers had in general?
Well, there were, of course, the Depression was one thing. We were just going into it, David, in 1930, and to top it all off, we had the worst drought, I guess, probably in history that year. People just hardly raised anything. You heard tales of people gathering a 20-acre field of corn in one wagon load, snapping the ears off and throwing them in a wagon, and still probably more serious than that was the water problem. Back then, very few people had farm lakes or farm ponds, and the ones they had were small and soon dried up, and springs dried up, wells dried up, and cisterns dried up, and many people had to haul water or drive their livestock maybe for miles to get to water. And so with low prices and a very low crop yield, why, it was just a real rough year for everybody.
You've already explained some about the beef and dairy cattle farmers, what problems they had. Is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, we didn't have any great dairy industry in the county at the time. Most people had Jersey cattle that were dairying, and they primarily sold cream, sire cream. We had a number of cream stations in the county and in Springfield, and we had a few people that brought retail milk into town from nearby farms, but mainly it was a cream market. But until sometime in the late 30s, I don't have the exact date, where Armore built a plant here in Springfield and began receiving whole milk to make cheese. And that shifted a good many people from the cream thing to into selling whole milk. Of course, that plant has prospered and grown to where it's a regional plant now.
If it was so difficult back in that time, which obviously it was, how did the farm survive?
Well, it was just a question of, I think, of doing without, mainly. People just walked instead of driving, those that had cars or trucks, and wherever they could, and they economized in every possible way they could. Things were so severe, David, that we had many people in, I guess it would have been late 1930, early 1931, didn't have sufficient money to buy seed to plant the coming year or feed for their livestock. And we had what was called a feed and seed loan at the time, which we helped to work with for those people who couldn't get bank credit to provide enough little sums of money for them to buy feed and buy seed.
What about the typical cattle farm in the 1930s? Was it large or small? Was it family-owned in Washington County? Exactly what was it like?
Well, typically, David, it would have been a small or medium-sized family farm. Of course, many farms had, particularly the farms that were larger, had tobacco tenants, people who very likely lived in a small house on the farm and raised or helped raise the tobacco crop and also worked for the farmer. It was, many people had beef cattle, and of course some of them switched from those over to dairy cattle when the Armore plant came here. But the herds tended, of course, to be small because of the size of the farms.
Was farming mechanized back in that time in Washington County?
Not a great deal. We had some people with tractors up in the north end of the county. You had a lot of people with draft horses, Percherons and Belgians, and most of the work was just by main strength and awkwardness, and there was not any great deal of mechanization going on. And of course, at that time too, we had no electrical current except in the towns, and there were probably maybe a handful of farms near Springfield that had electric service, but the rest didn't.
Did all the family members work on the farm? Were there large families, or exactly what was it like?
Well, many of the families were large, and of course you had all sizes, but as a rule, the kids on the farm were, unless they were prosperous from some other source, they were pretty much involved in the work going on there. Of course, at that time too, as it's still done now, some of the ladies helped milk and raise gardens, and besides the ordinary household duties.
The federal government, did they, during the Depression, of course, they helped a lot of areas of the economy. Did they get involved in agriculture in Washington?
Oh, yes. I mentioned it, the feed and seed loans, and then in, excuse me, in 19, I guess it was 33, the adjustment program started, the AAA program, which was a federal program. First in wheat, which we didn't have a whole lot of people involved in the county because we didn't grow a great deal of wheat. And then the corn hog program, and of course the one thing of great importance was the burley tobacco program, which I believe the first adjustment year was in 1934, maybe, the first year of the reduced crops. The farmers received payments by signing up. They had a acreage payment, and when the tobacco was sold, they had another payment there. And while those payments were not large, it was a great help to our people here to be able to get some extra income.
Did REA, was REA established back in that time?
I, again, don't know the exact year. It was long in the late 30s, I believe, David, and we had quite a fight going on with KU. They were, of course, against rural electrification, and they were attempting to build a line from Springfield to Willisburg, which would have split our county, and make it very difficult to have gotten service to the county. So we made many trips up to Frankfort before the Public Service Commission to see that that was not done, and eventually, we started getting current about 2 or 3 years later.
Well, what influence then did the county agents have? How many were there in Kentucky about, and could you lobby for things that you wanted to get like that?
Well, we didn't. The county agents at that time tended not to actually lobby. They attempted to get people, their leadership, to do that. And we at that time also established our Farm Bureau.
We were talking about the role of the county agent in the 1930s, whether they had much influence.
Well, of course, back in the early days of extension work, why, farmers hardly knew what to expect of a county agent, and some of the county agents, or well, maybe all of them, were had a hard time deciding what to do to help. One thing, of course, the first thing they had to do was to get acquainted with people. And in order to do that, they did things like culling chickens and docking and castrating lambs and helping to dip sheep. And things of that nature, which we call personal service. And it was not a good way for a teacher, which is essentially what a county agent is, to spend his time. So we had to try to, you might say, to wean people away from that, because both of my predecessors had done it. Of course, to start out the AAA, you had to have a county agent. And we worked in the role of a teacher to tell people about the program and to generally supervise the office as in sort of an office manager role.
Now, if we'll go on to the 1940s, of course, World War II occurred, and that, I'm sure, had impact. It had impact on the United States economy. What changes in farming did occurred in the 1940s?
Well, of course, we had a difficult situation, David, during the war. We had to report to the draft board on farms as to their production, an estimate of their numbers of livestock and crops and so on. That was used by these boards in deciding whether a certain boy should go to the Army or be permitted to stay home. And, of course, we were not on the draft boards, but still we had to report to them. We also tried desperately to increase production of food during the war, and were involved in the collection of scrap metal and something else, I've forgotten what it was now, for the war effort.
How about changes in the beef and dairy cattle? You've already talked a little bit about that with farming in general. What about beef and dairy cattle?
Well, of course, we've worked all through the years, David, on the use of better bulls in both beef and dairy cattle. And then along in, I think it was about that time, maybe the mid-40s, we started our artificial breeding association here for dairy cattle. That was one of the great steps, the great innovations that was made at the time. Because farmers, ordinary farmer, even man with a few cows, could have the services of top dairy bulls and thereby increase the type and production of his herd. All through the years, ever since I've been here, we've had our Dairy Herd Improvement Association, which tests cattle for production, dairy cattle. And that has been one of the great tools that our dairy folks have had to improve their herds. Production testing program involves having a tester come by each month, weigh and take samples of the milk from each cow, and then that is calculated and a report given to the dairyman a short time later. That way he can get rid of the cull cows and take better care of the better cows and increase his profits. And that, together with the Artificial Breeding Association, I think has been the two great tools in our dairy improvement. Then over the years too, our beef thing has improved greatly by the use of better sires and greater attention to the cow herd, to better practices of feeding and management and parasite and insect control.
Was there an increase in mechanization in the 40s or any technical changes that happened either in farming or in the cattle industry?
I think the war, David, sort of opened the gate. A lot of boys had not been out, maybe out of the county a great deal, and when they saw all the technical advances in the armed services, they became aware of this, and we had a great increase in tractors and other farm machinery, and of course in milking equipment and the different dairy things at the time. That also followed the war too, increase in equipment.
Did the family members, the roles of the families change because of World War II, since some of the, I would assume some of the sons and fathers were off fighting?
Well, I think after the war, of course, during the war, a lot of people, particularly the women, some of the women folks and girls took a more active part in farming because they felt they had to support the war effort. And I think maybe the main effect it had was some of the boys saw the so-called glamour of city life and decided they'd stay there rather than return to the farm. One interesting facet there is the farm classes that were held. Many, and I guess most counties, had teachers who taught veterans for some several years after the war, and these boys had regular meetings, school-type meetings, and the instructor would also visit them and help them work with their projects on their home farms.
Did the role of the federal government change during the 1940s?
At some point there, David, the AAA was declared unconstitutional, and it was followed by the ECP program, where farmers were given payments for carrying out certain conservation practices. And also, of course, the tobacco program continued under that same regime. And those, I guess, were two of the main things that happened during that period of time.
Were most of the farms still family-owned?
Yes, of course, we do have, and always have had, some farms run by an operating tenant, where someone in town, maybe a banker or a doctor or someone, had a farm out in the county, and he tried to get as good a man as he could to run the farm for him. But in the main, I'd say something like, maybe 80% of the farms were family-owned and family-operated. Now, that does not include, David, the tenants. Well, by tenants, I mean some people would call them sharecroppers, who were on the farm primarily to raise tobacco, generally with the family, the owner managing.
With the end of the war and, I suppose, a little bit of a boom in the 1940s, we come now to the 1950s, and was farming in this area different during the 1950s? Did the end of World War II and the Korean War or any other event influence it to any extent?
Well, I think the people continued to mechanize, and some of them, I think, went overboard on it and bought too much machinery. But I guess everybody thought there would be a depression after the war, but that didn't happen. In fact, it was, I remember, it kind of went the other way. And we just continued to, more or less, to improve in technology and machinery and in control of plant insects and pests and livestock diseases and pests. And as I recall at the time, it was simply just a continuation of the what had been going on before. Of course, as I mentioned, the fact that these, a lot of farm boys who had not been out in the world got glimpses of some of the things that technology could do, and that gave them an incentive, I think, those who returned to the farms, to try to do a better job.
Did most of them return, or did they do something else? Were the family farms continuing?
I, of course, have no figures on that, David, but some returned and some didn't. I'd say that probably over half returned to the farms, is a rough guess.
Did the federal government, was their role the same, or did it continue to change?
Well, I mentioned that the schools they had for veterans that went on for, I don't know, some possibly 4, 5, or 6 years. And beyond that, why, of course, the tobacco program continued. There were changes from year to year in that. But beyond that, as I remember now, it was essentially about the same.
The relationship to dairy cattle and beef cattle, which was in the majority at this time? Were they both growing?
Well, of course, we have, I think somewhere around 25,000, I'm giving you present figures now, David, beef cows in the county, and possibly 10 or 15,000 dairy cows. So the beef outnumber the dairy, one reason being that to start out a dairy now requires a whole lot of capital, the cattle and the milking equipment, buildings, and so on, and where you can get into the beef business at a much lower initial cost.
As we go into the 1960s, did the change in presidential administration from Republican to Democrat affect Washington County farmers at all?
Well, at this point, David, I can't think of any great changes. Of course, as a rule, under a Democratic administration, you expect a little bit more liberal attitude of the federal government, but I don't recall any great changes that took place at the time. The one thing that I don't think this was political, and I don't remember what year it came in. I believe it was sometime in the 60s that we shifted over from an acreage control program in tobacco to a poundage control, which was, I think most growers agree, a very good thing to do.
Were there changes in the cattle industry in Washington County in the 60s?
You tended to have, in the 60s and possibly in the 70s too, and maybe going back into the 50s, a growing number of people who produced grade A milk. I mentioned to you earlier about the Armour factory here, and then there were other plants outside the county that bought some milk here. Many people, because of the higher milk price, tended to go into grade A production, and it wound up where we had only maybe 15 or 20 years back with, I think our present figure is 90-some-odd grade A dairies here in the county at the present time. That has been one more or less major change.
Could you explain what you mean by grade A a little bit?
Well, grade A is primarily producing milk for human consumption as fluid milk or butter or cottage cheese or that type of thing, where manufactured milk is going into cheese or some food product or some dried milk or something of that nature. It costs more for equipment for grade A, and you also have to meet certain health standards and periodic inspections by the health people. And for those reasons that the milk brings more per hundredweight, and of course it costs a little more to produce too.
We were talking about some of the changes in the cattle industry. How about the cattle farm? Were they still about the same size? Or?
Well, with the grade A herds, David, you tended to have larger herds. We have some herds of up towards 100 cows being milked in the county now. And the beef herds, we have, of course, our Feeder Calf Association here in the county, which was formed about 25 or 30 years ago. And many of those herds have cattle numbers ranging up from 25 up to sometimes 70 or 80 or 100 cows. And then we have a whole lot of smaller people that maybe run 10 or 15 or 20 cows.
Has education made any impact on the farms in Washington County as far as people going to school and coming back with new ideas or whatever?
Well, I think definitely it has, David. You have many, many more high school graduates in the county on farms than you once did. And of course, we have a number of boys every year who go to the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture or the ag schools. Presently, we of course have a two-year program out at St. Catharines, where a boy can get, or a girl can get certain basic things out of the way there, and then wind up with a BS degree at the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture. So farming, of course, this is an old cliche, I guess, has become more specialized in a way and requiring more education and more carrying out of exacting procedures than it ever has. And a certain amount of know-how and smartness is needed to do that. And this old thing of, we used to have an old saying, a farmer saying that if little does good, twice as much will do better. And if you try that with some of these new powerful chemicals we have now, you're in deep trouble.
Over the course of the last 20 years, 15 of which from 1970, or in the 1970s anyway, through the 80s, what have some of the trends been in farming?
Well, David, I don't know of anything drastic. I think you had some expansion. Some people increased their acreages. You had some expansion in the dairy herds with larger numbers, and of course the equipment, particularly the dairy equipment, has been greatly improved. We now have these milking parlors where you can milk, it'll hold 6, 8, or 10, or 12 cows, and you have a great improvement in the milk handling facilities through the use of bulk tanks. By the way, they came in back, oh, I think in the 1950s maybe, and for the grade A people, and also the market milk people, the Armour people, started putting them in shortly thereafter. And to my surprise, I didn't think they would work for the cheese milk, but to my surprise, it took off and caused it so much easier for the dairyman to handle, and it also, due to refrigeration, produces a much higher quality milk. So those technical changes and the fact that we're working with a better informed and more educated people has improved the situation, I think, a great deal.
Is farming attractive to children, farm children, or other people coming up these days? Are children going into farming? Are the farm families continuing?
Well, of course, right in the last year or two, we've had some depressing things happen, and I remember at the seminar out of St. Catharines, someone asked the question if it should encourage their son going into farming, and one of the speakers said, well, hobby farming would be all right, but if it's for making a living, you'd better talk with me about it. So I don't think we're having but few, if any, city boys coming out and going into farming, but a certain proportion of our homegrown kids are staying in and doing, in many cases, just a real fine job. I think we'll always have a supply of farmers. It's a very demanding life, but on the other hand, working in a steel mill is not a very easy thing either. With our continued education on the part of the schools and our extension service and the VOAG people and the soil conservation people and our other different service groups, why, I think many farm people are being helped substantially and to do a better job and to make more net income during the year.
Has the federal role changed over the last 15 years or so?
Well, of course, the thing that is bothering our people in the county now, David, is this tobacco program. It's kind of in a rickety position, and apparently the states are not seeing eye to eye on what new program we should have. Earlier, the present federal administration had planned to phase out the program in 6 or 8 years, and it would be a death blow, I think, to Washington County and all of the other tobacco-producing counties in the state and nation. It is a type of thing that you must have, I think, a control over production, because we saw the poverty in many years back before we had a program, back before 1933. Actually, some poor farmers, when the tobacco was sold, the crop didn't pay enough to pay their what we call floor expenses or the selling expenses, and we certainly don't want to return to anything like that. So we must have some kind of a joint decision or getting together on a good federal program to keep it going, because it's, I think, vital to our county and to the state and the whole Burley Belt, and in fact the whole tobacco belts, that we have a federal program.
Do you think there will be more diversification in the future, different things that they will go into besides tobacco?
Well, we are, the colleges, the College of Agriculture and Extension Service are looking at many things, but it's another one of these things, David, that's easier said than done. you speak of vegetable crops, which is one alternative, which some of the people are growing bell peppers in the county this year. But if one county, I'm doing a little guessing now, but if one county substituted their tobacco acreage as bell peppers, well, we could flood the whole United States with bell peppers in one fell swoop. And it's difficult to, well, in fact, I think impossible to find any crop substitute for tobacco. We are, of course, expanding in certain lines of livestock, like sheep. Several of the people in the county are increasing their sheep flocks, which went to almost a zero level back 8 or 10 years ago. And it would appear to me that livestock may offer a better alternative to many farms and certain crops, because we just haven't come up with anything yet that you know, that hundreds of people or thousands of people in a county can grow to replace tobacco.
Is there any danger of large farms crowding out the small farmer or the small family farm? Does it take too much to survive?
Well, I don't think so, David. Now, you have here a vastly different situation from what you might have out in the wheat belt in the Dakotas and Minnesota and out that way, and or the corn soybean thing in Iowa, Nebraska, and so on. Farming here would have to, must involve livestock. I don't think there's any alternative to that, because we have so much rough land that has to be used for pasture hay production. And it requires a high caliber man to manage a farm of any size. And I can't see any giant corporation like U.S. Steel or IBM or somebody like that buying up and making large farms in Washington County because of the management difficulty, and there are some other problems too. So I know you read a lot about that, and a lot of people worry about it, but it's not one of my front burner problems at the present time.
Then would you recommend young people coming up and having a choice of vocations, would you recommend that they go into farming still? Is there a bright enough future for it?
I think if a young man or a young woman has any foothold in a farm, that is, maybe they're the only heir or partly a half heir or something, if they have any equity in it, I think, and if they like farming and are interested in it, I think we have some people like that who will and should stay in farming. Now, it is very difficult, if not impossible, David, for a young person without some capital to buy and pay for a farm right now. The land is so doggone high that it's just almost a physical impossibility to buy stock and pay for a farm without having some initial capital or equity in land to start out with. But I don't think we'll run out of farmers. I think that we'll keep enough of our talented young people at home that they'll keep up the production. But it's a risky business. It's a rough life, as many other things are rough. It's the finest place in the world to raise kids. And so I think that we'll have people continue going to farm.
Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate this interview.
You're entirely